back together again, you and I, chatting it up Tuesday style, November 18th, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. We open the show looking at the campaign launch videos from the two major Republican gubernatorial candidates, former New Britain Mayor Aaron Stewart and Greenwich State Senate member Ryan Fazio. Hartford Current columnist and blogger Kevin Rennie dropped by to discuss the ongoing controversy surrounding PURA, the state's public utilities regulatory authority. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio updated the state's impending purchase of Waterbury Hospital. And CBS News congressional correspondent Nicole Killian had the latest from Washington, D.C. on a key U.S. House vote earlier in the day to release the Jeffrey Epstein files. And we will, of course, keep you updated with the progress of a likely House vote today on the Epstein files. And you'll get that top and bottom of every hour till 6 tonight right here on WICC 600 AM, 95.9 FM. And, of course, online for you, voiceofct.com. But let's start with this. I would think, and maybe we will have some other entrance to the governor's race next year, I would think. But it's possible. But I think the race, for all intents and purposes, may be set. I don't know. Now, on the Democratic side, you just heard Chris mention there that Governor Ned Lamont, of course, a few days ago, declared to run for a third term, which a lot of people are saying, hey, Governor, be careful, don't do this third term thing. But the guy's got scads of money. He's in his 70s. He appears to like what he's doing, so he's going to be try to keep doing it for another 4 years. Hamden, Democratic State Rep Josh Elliott, representing the more progressive side of the Democratic Party he's in. And now today, as we speak to you at 10 past the hour here, we apparently have what may be the Republican field here. As former New Britain mayor, multi-term New Britain Republican mayor Aaron Stewart, you heard some of her campaign video there. Everybody kicks off now with a fundraising video. You have to have video to kick it off. She says she wants to try something different. And a few weeks ago, we had a friend of the radio station here, Ryan Fazio. He climbed on board as well. So how do you feel about this? Now, honestly, and I wanted to start off with this, I don't know who would make a more formidable, because I have heard the emphasis on both syllables, I don't know who would make a more formidable candidate to against Governor Ned Lamont. Now, I guess we could say against Josh Elliott. You never know. Could we see a Zohran Mamdani effect here in Connecticut? I don't think that's going to happen. With all due respect to State Representative Mr. Elliott here, Josh Elliott, I should say, is it possible? I guess I don't think so. So let's assume, for the sake of this argument, that any challenge by Josh Elliott is short-lived or lived and held off by Governor Ned Lamont. So let's say he cruises to the nomination. Which Republican would be a more formidable challenger to the governor? What do you think? Here's the thing. I don't know. So in the first part of the program today at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, and you can do a talk or a text. Once again, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Who or whom would be the best Republican challenger for the GOP in Connecticut, which admittedly kind of took a licking this past election night in the odd year municipal elections? But who do you think at this point? And I've been kind of tossing this around in my feeble little head here all day, seeing that Aaron Stewart is now in the race. Who do you think makes the most sense for the Republican Party in Connecticut? And honestly, I'm not saying this for effect, just to get you going here. I don't know. I honestly, to be fair to Senator Fazio, and to be fair, to former Mayor Aaron Stewart. I have no idea. I think they both bring certain tangibles and intangibles to the table. Now, no matter who the nominee ends up being, right? Whether it's Aaron Stewart, whether it's whether it's Ryan Fazio, it's going to be refreshing. Yes, it's going to be refreshing. With no disrespect to previous candidates, it's going to be refreshing to actually have someone with some substantial amount of governance and a resume in their background running here instead of somebody who just has a lot of money. And with all due respect to Tom Foley, with all due respect to Bob Stefanowski, they were guys that had a lot of money. And for whatever reason, Republicans in this state, and again, this is nothing personal against these two gentlemen, Mr. Foley, Mr. Stefanowski, very, in their own ways, accomplished individuals, shall we say? But let's face it, they took up the mantle not once, but twice for each, because part of the reason was in a position back, you know, in those three, four races ago, where the GOP would have had trouble raising money, they were both able to self-finance. Good for them. Tom Foley, though, came up 0 for 2. Bob Stefanowski may have been a nice guy. I talked to him once or twice during one of the campaigns. He came up 0 for 2. So be that as it may, is there automatically going to be a better shot now for the Republicans in this state? Because both of these candidates, whomever you think you want to vote for, if you're a Republican primary voter, Ryan Fazio or Aaron Stewart, I think you can agree that they both bring kind of a refreshing change to the campaign, even as much as they are on the younger side. And you can juxtapose that against the governor, and God bless him, he looks good for, what is he, 70, 71, 72, something like that? Now, when we come back, if you did not hear it, I will play the entirety of the campaign kickoff video. If you don't go to YouTube, or you're not online, and you haven't heard this or seen this, and this may not show up on TV for another several months, so there is a campaign kickoff video for former New Britain Mayor Aaron Stewart, which I think is very well done. It's a little tongue-in-cheek. That's what she does. She's very good on social media. And in the interest of being fair, we will also play next to it Ryan Fazio's video for 2 or 3 weeks from 2 or 3 weeks ago. But you tell me, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. Whether you are a Republican or not, even if you're a Democrat, you're an independent voter, you won't be voting, say, in the Republican primary if there is one. But, which declared Republican candidate right now, Aaron Stewart or Ryan Fazio, which do you think, if you would tend to like to see a change in the parties in Hartford, who do you think would make a better candidate to do that? Not necessarily saying, I think Aaron Stewart is smarter than Ryan Fazio, or I think Ryan Fazio knows more than Aaron Stewart. That's not what I'm looking at. Ultimately, it's not who you like, it's who do you think can win. You tell me. We'll come back. We'll go to the phones, talk about who you think, and I'll also tee up Aaron Stewart's kickoff video today. It's very interesting. All that and more coming up right here as we're up and we're underway on a Tuesday, Connecticut Today. All righty, all righty. So who do you think, if you are a couple categories here, or even all three categories, if you are a registered Republican, a registered Democrat, or just somebody in this state, the great state of Connecticut, who's not registered with a party, But you will vote on whomever the ultimate nominee will be from each party. Now that we have Aaron Stewart, multi-term former mayor of New Britain, in the race officially against Ryan Fazio, who entered 3 weeks ago. What do you think of this? I got to tell you something. The whomever the nominee is, and there's already buzz, well, whomever doesn't win between these two, could there be a unity ticket? Would Ryan Fazio, if he lost the nomination, run with Aaron Stewart as her lieutenant governor? Would she run as his lieutenant governor? I don't know. Let me tell you something. Aaron Stewart running on the lieutenant governor line versus Susan Bisewitz could be interesting here. So what do you think? We will play Aaron Stewart's announcement video from YouTube coming up. It's a little tongue-in-cheek. And yeah, you'll recognize the voiceover people. You're, oh, yeah, I know that one. So her video was not inexpensive to produce. I get that. If only for the voiceover guy. Let's start out with Bill in Fairfield. Bill, hi, you're on WICC. How are you?
I'm good, Paul. How are you?
I'm good, Bill. What do you think?
I've never heard of either of these two guys. Can you fill me in?
No, no, no.
Britain guy?
She's a woman. It's one woman and one guy.
I apologize.
No,
see,
no.
I think that's the problem with the Republicans. You don't have a clue who they are. They could be the greatest person in the world standing right next to you.
Yeah.
If they don't speak up and tell you who they are,
yeah,
you'll never know who they
yeah
are. And I also think that they could both skip down Main Street together, and it's just, I've heard people say, I'm a driver, and I have people in my car.
Okay.
I've heard them. This is a quote.
All right.
This is the quote.
All right.
They've said, I would rather vote for a urn of Joe Biden's ashes than for a Republican.
Why?
And that just shows how, yeah, buddy, that's
yeah
a direct quote. They'd rather pay $10 for a gallon of milk.
Yep.
They'd rather pay all these Connecticut taxes for
yep
gas and everything
mm-hmm
else just to spite their nose off their face. And it drives me nuts. I have no defense to talk to these people.
Yeah.
You got to walk a fine line.
Oh, I know. It's because you're on the job. I get it. I understand it. Yeah, if it's anything beyond small talk, you got to be careful. I get it. I know.
Yeah, you got to whistle Dixie and sing Battle Hymn of the Republic all at the same time. But I don't have to worry about any response from a company because I do it for myself.
There you go.
And it's just a wonderful job. But you hear these people
yeah
that just do not, for the life of me, understand
yeah
that, you know, give it a little time. Just give it a little time. Get
yeah
the hate out of your system.
Yeah, yeah. Bill,
it's our
thank
president
you.
We look what we did with Joe Biden. We went
I
through
know
all the 4 years of all that.
I
nonsense
know, I know. Bill,
so thank
you, my friend.
Time.
Thank you.
I will.
I'll get into your answer here a little bit. Yeah, I mean, now, let's talk about the name recognition thing. Now, Bill said he didn't know who these two people were, and maybe that's my fault. It's Aaron, E-R-I-N, Stewart. And sometimes some people hear, oh, Aaron, two guys. No, it's Aaron Stewart. Now, again, part of her story is unique. And I suspect here that more people, when they find out she is now officially in the race, may say, oh, yeah, that woman. Yeah, oh, yeah, she was a Republican that kept wanting and kept running and winning in a Democratic city. So that may help her. But again, Bill's call is a great way to kick us off here on a Tuesday. Bill, thank you. Like, you know, and he's inferring, like, I don't know who these people are. That anybody will tell you that in politics. Name recognition is not half the battle. It's like two-thirds of the battle. So when we come back, we will play the audio. I can't do video, obviously. You can find it on YouTube. But I'll play the audio of Aaron Stewart's campaign kickoff announcement. And if you watch the video, it's not alluded to on the audio, but there's one key part in her video that's very interesting. We'll talk about that coming up right here on WICC. We have talked for on and off for years about whispers and rumblings about PURA, the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority, on this show, on Lisa Wexler's show, on Melissa in the Morning. And the fact that now Governor Ned Lamont, heading into an election year, is still kind of in the midst here of a little bit of damage control in the wake of the previous Pura Commissioner Marissa Gillette, and there was controversies as to, missing emails, destructed text messages. Did she take part in something with some legislators that she couldn't have? And our next guest is one of the journalists in the state who's been uncovering just new and even more interesting things. We talk about his blog all the time, Daily Ructions. He also writes for the Hartford Current. Kevin Rennie joins us again. Kevin, it's Paul here. It's been a while. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hello. I am good enough for the tumultuous time.
Yes, and Kevin, I love you.
I can hope for.
I love your piece. Connecticut accomplished what was thought to be impossible, Kevin. And what might that be? What has been accomplished here?
Well, they have made the public utilities companies sympathetic figures in this now almost a year long drama over a opinion piece that was published on the Connecticut Mirror website in last December under the names of Senator Norm Needleman and Representative Jonathan Steinberg. And there is reason to think that they did not write it. And that the search for that, for the truth, has resulted in a cull of public figures and the change at Pura that is really remarkable. I would not have predicted it months ago. And I have to give a tremendous amount of credit to my Hartford Current colleague, Ed Mahoney, who is really a pro at this stuff.
Now, Kevin, explain to folks who may have kind of heard about this, the controversy over this op-ed. The allegations are correct that Marissa Gillette, as you say, may have written the whole thing, may have collaborated with this. That is not either allowed or thought to be proper with a person in her position. Correct.
Correct. She is supposed to be a neutral arbiter of utility regulation issues, and that op-ed accused the utilities, particularly Eversource, of engaging in a conspiracy with the international financial ratings agencies to downgrade the utilities ratings so that they could say, you see what Pura has done to us. And the idea that international ratings agencies would somehow become captive of a regional utility company. I mean, it's nuts. It is absolutely devoid of any sense of reality. But I have to say, it was pretty well written, as a screed goes.
Yeah.
And there were, just before it was published, there were some text messages between Steinberg and Gillette stating that she was reviewing some op-ed, some piece, and that was just a couple of days before it appeared. And then afterward, there were a couple of emails about what a great reaction it had gotten. And she had no text messages. Senator Needleman also had no text messages, but Ed Mahoney of the Current was able to get text messages through a Freedom of Information request that were on Representative Steinberg's phone. You know, when a text is sent and received, that means two people, at least a bare minimum, people have it. And in this case, only one person had it. In fact, I heard now former chair Marissa Gillette on the Lisa Wexler show shoveling an acre of nonsense about these text messages and saying, well, they are available. They're not available. They're not unavailable. Well, of course, they weren't available from her phone. And then it turned out under the press of litigation that she had automatically deleted her text messages on her phone. Now, those text messages are considered public documents.
Sure.
It doesn't matter where they are. It doesn't matter that they are on her personal phone or a phone issued by Pura, if there had been one. It's the content of the document and those circumstances that determine whether or not it is a public document, not the device that it appears on. And so she did not tell the truth. It took a long time for the Attorney General's office, which has been representing Pura, to come clean and say, well, the reason that there are no text messages is that they were all deleted automatically. They had not initially said that. And a point I made in my column on Sunday is that most people don't have the resources of a utility company.
Sure.
And so to press this fight to get information, the information that should be available through a very basic Freedom of Information request. But when you meet resistance, it is expensive to fight.
Mm.
And the utilities have the resources to fight. I don't think the people at Pura ever thought it would go this far. But they have unmasked real contempt for our open government and public documents laws. And that is, for your listeners, probably doesn't sound very important. But it is. It is how we learn in many ways how the people's business is being conducted by those we elect and who are appointed and powerful public offices.
Yeah. And Kevin, in about the minute we have left here, the governor has kind of been asked about this stuff and what was said behind the scene. And he's now tap dancing here. And could this come up in the elections? What are your thoughts here to wrap this up?
It could. I think it will come up in this election. The problem with this past year is we've gone through all of this about the documents and who's fair-minded and who's not. None of that has lowered electric rates by a nickel.
Yeah.
And so a lot of time has been spent on that. Now, the governor may be on the verge of something really important, and that is we may have a new natural gas line opened, from New York to Connecticut. And if he accomplishes that, no one's going to care about this because he will have made a huge stride forward. And there are about to be two Republicans running for governor.
Yeah.
I don't really associate any particular solution to our high electric rates to either one of those candidates. So governor is sort of uncomfortable, but it's going to be tough to assail him, I think, as the next several months go by.
Folks, read this piece.
This is why we have elections.
Yeah, this is true. Folks, read Kevin Rennie's latest piece in The Current, Connecticut Accomplished What Was Thought to Be Impossible. His blog is also Daily Ructions. He also mentioned the reporting of Ed Mahoney and also the reporting in the Connecticut Mirror. But as Kevin said, listen, some of this may make your eyes.
There wasn't really reporting in the Connecticut Mirror. Ran that.
That
op-ed. Yeah.
I see what you mean.
Had very little to say about it in the past year.
Well, go back and read that op-ed. Find it, folks, and you'll see what triggered this whole thing. Kevin Rennie. Hey, Kevin, thanks. Good to have you on. We'll have you on sooner down the road. Thank you, sir.
Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate that. Megan Portfolio joins us every Tuesday at this time. She of the Hartford Portfolio blog, the Yankee Institute, and she's among several people all around the state in the journalistic field watching the now presumed acquisition of Waterbury Hospital by UConn Health, which, of course, is an extension of the state of Connecticut. Good afternoon, Ms. Portfolio. How are you?
I'm doing well. And yourself, Paul?
I'm doing well. And I hear the dog is doing better, too. The gender assignment surgery, everything good?
Oh, his gender-affirming care went well. He's officially neutered, and the cone came off last night, so he's a happy boy.
Okay, so now he can troll, like, all the dog bars and not have to worry, which is, whew, look at that.
Well, he was a little, and he really likes the ladies in my neighborhood.
Does he really?
It's good all around.
Oh, really?
He's a cad.
Is he really? Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess we saw
a whole show on Bruno.
Yeah. Oh, Bruno. There's the. You love the name too, right? They all say, "Oh my God, here comes Bruno!" Yes. Waterbury Hospital going to be going to be acquired by as part of UConn Health, which of course is an extension of the state. And I think we chatted on this a couple of weeks ago, Megan. I was interested saying to you, "Hey, let's see what the labor situation is like here." And sure enough, that's the subject of your latest piece here.
Yeah, it was actually, I don't even know where I found this, or I don't know where I find half of my stuff, but it just appeared on my screen one day. It was an October 17th statement from an AFT affiliate.
Yeah.
They're the union for, I believe, the nurses and the techs over at Waterbury Hospital.
Yeah.
And we haven't even seen a bill yet. We didn't have a public hearing because this is an emergency bill. Mm-hmm. But we hadn't seen anything. And they were all out in front of this. They were dictating who they wanted to purchase the hospital. They were not interested in a for-profit. They wanted a non-profit, or they wanted UConn to buy it.
Yeah.
They're talking about, you know, if whoever the buyer is, if they come in and anything changes with staffing levels or employment conditions, they're going to take collective action, meaning they were ready to strike. And here we are. So now they're already putting out there into the universe.
Yeah.
There's labor unrest. And part of the labor unrest at Waterbury Hospital is the dumpster fire of a Prospect Medical Holding that literally trashed the place.
Yeah. Yeah.
This place is a disaster. It is so outdated. The staff was miserable. The patients were miserable. And we just ended up buying it, apparently. There's a public hearing next Tuesday, I think, in the Texas bankruptcy court, and that'll seal the deal. So essentially, last week during our special session, they put this bill in that allowed UConn to be able to bond in order to buy hospitals.
Yeah.
No public hearing or anything. The bill kind of just passed because, let's be honest, the community needs the hospital.
Oh, sure.
The community needs health care.
Yeah.
Like, I'm definitely not advocating closing the hospital because it's an absolute need. I mean, and Waterbury, one of our biggest cities,
hospital there. And that's the elephant in the room here that I keep telling people. Like, you just can't close hospitals when, if you have, God forbid, another pandemic or an airplane crash or some sort of mass accident. And I'm sure they have it all figured out by region, Megan, that you need the beds, you need the ERs, you need the beds. You're right. You just can't close hospitals and say, "Well, too bad, go to the next town." Doesn't work that way.
Well, Yale was actually going to buy this monstrosity.
Yeah.
But and this isn't the only reason, but it's one of the big reasons. It took over a year for the certificate of need process to pan out.
Oh.
So Yale just bailed on it. A year. Oh. So in Connecticut, we're one of the strictest states with certificate of need.
Yeah, you told me
that. You literally
can't
change the paint in the men's room without getting a certificate of need. Now, I'm exaggerating. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
But that's how strict the process is. Fortunately, last special session in the beginning of the year, they did pass a bill to speed up the process, but only in terms of buying a hospital that's in bankruptcy. So that's, I believe they have a 60-day time frame. So I actually supported that bill. I wish we would do a lot more in the certificate of need department to be determined. I've been hearing some chatter, so hopefully next year we can fix it and avoid a lot of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
But back to Waterbury Hospital. So they approved it. They approved allowing UConn to bond for it. So that's $390 million that, you know, is taxpayer money that they're going to borrow to do this. God only knows how much more it's going to cost. Because, I mean, literally, everything is outdated over there. Their computer system, their equipment, their elevators don't work. The roof's leaking.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a mess. But on top of that, we're forgiving like over $200 million in taxes that Prospect Medical owes.
Mm.
So, I mean, going into this deal, it's already a bad deal. We already have labor unrest. We already have the union out there putting it out there that they will basically strike if anything changes over there or they don't get, you know, their way. Now, also think about it. You're now kind of part of the UConn family, but not technically, because the bill that passed stated that the hospital workers would not be state employees. But
think
about it. You're a union member. You work for Waterbury Hospital. I mean, I can go easily into open payroll on the government website and see what every single state employee makes. I can go punch in a nurse. Oh, wow, they're making this. Oh, wow, they've got health care for life.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, they have a pet. I want this. We're kind of family, you know, we're cousins. I want these same benefits. So that end of the mix, I mean, I don't see this hospital ever getting into the black. And because it's going to be, it's not 100% owned. We're going to be the majority owner.
Yeah.
What happens when they can't pay the bills and there's a budget shortfall?
Well, who's the other?
Same with UConn Health.
And this is interesting, you mentioned this. If UConn Health and the state are not 100% owner, am I missing something here? Who's the other owner here?
I'm not sure. It's really been very quiet. I mean, now keep in mind, I'm not a healthcare policy expert.
Okay.
I don't follow healthcare too closely. Yeah. I was just very interested in this hospital deal because I'm very interested in labor.
Yeah.
Labor unions. So that's why I was, you know, following this thing. So I'm not really sure who the minority party is. I'm not even sure. I just remember them saying they would be the majority owner.
And to mention also that I know people that have gone to UConn Health. I have some friends that used to work there, friends of mine whose parents have gone to John Dempsey. It's a great hospital. There's never any questions or scandals about the care. But money-wise, you and I both know.
Oh, no, without a doubt. They've got great care. I mean, I went once as a kid. I used to get migraines. I went to UConn Health, and they're fantastic. But they don't know how to balance a budget.
It's a money rat hole. In fact, you remember the governor, Megan, about 2 years ago, two, 3 years ago, again, smart. You could tell he's a businessman. The governor saying, hey, wait a minute. We could save a lot of money if we rolled, and I don't know how he was going to do this, but basically made UConn Health part of UConn proper, which it's not. And a lot of people went nuts. Oh, you can't do that. And so even the governor admits that as far as money is concerned, it's a rat hole.
Oh, and it is a rat hole. And you can think CBAC because they're all CBAC members. And who do you think pays for unlimited health care, you know, to your dad and pension to your dad and guaranteed raises every year and lump sum payments every year? I mean, that has to be paid for somewhere. So, I mean, it's just a losing business model for UConn Health, and I don't see it getting any better growing it. I mean, granted, maybe they'll have more opportunities to get grant money and do research, but how does that translate into dollars and making this thing, you know, operate, you know, at least breaking even? I mean, I'd be happy with a break even, but I mean, we're bonding this, which means there's interest. So I would like to see a profit so we can pay that debt down.
All right, folks, check it out. It's at the Hartford Portfolio Yankee Institute. Megan Portfolio takes a look at now, I guess, the impending purchase by the state and by UConn Health to roll Hartford Hospital into UConn Health. Megan, thanks. Take care. Tell Bruno I said way to go and be good, and we'll talk next week.
I'll give him a little pat on the head for you.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Megan.
Bye, Paul.
All right, bye-bye. All right, yeah. And the big story today, the House passing a vote to release the Jeffrey Epstein files. Now what happens? And what are those files going to look like if they're released? CBS News congressional correspondent Nicole Killian standing by for us in D.C. Nicole, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. We know you must be absolutely swamped today. So now it goes to the Senate. What's the best bet there as to what happens?
Well, Majority Leader John Thune has indicated that he could hold a vote on this as soon as today and that it's unlikely that the Senate may try to change this bill.
Yeah.
Speaker Mike Johnson had indicated that he had spoken with Leader Thune and that he expected that the bill might be tweaked in the Senate. But now Thune is saying that's not the case and could move forward shortly.
I would imagine, Nicole, just to wrap up here with you, this has to be one of the more bizarre or strange cases here that you've ever covered. First, you had the president about a week ago saying, no, this is nothing, this is a hoax, and now all of a sudden release the files. Does anybody know what's going on here or not?
Well, he's still calling it a hoax on the part of Democrats.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has now said that he has nothing to hide here. He was not involved with Jeffrey Epstein, you know, besides obviously, you know, knowing him and being an acquaintance with him. He just said today at the White House that, you know, he threw him out of his club at, at Mar-a-Lago. So look, you know, the president obviously may have seen the writing on the wall in terms of this vote today, because it was clear and has been clear for several days now that it would be a pretty decisive vote. We saw a near unanimous vote in the House with only one Republican defecting. So given the politics of that, the president has no choice really but to sign this bill if it comes to his desk.
Yeah. Nicole Kelly in CBS News. Nicole, thank you. We appreciate it. Take care. Thank you.
You bet.
Appreciate it. There you go.